Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
This Father's Day at Lowe's, score free gifts for the greatest dad. Right now, get a free select DeWalt, Craftsman, or Kobalt tool with purchase of a select battery kit. Plus, get a free Werner 2-foot aluminum ladder when you buy an 8-foot fiberglass ladder. Shop these deals and more this Father's Day at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 6/15 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
It continues to be one of the most interesting trials I think that we have ever covered here, the trial of Karen Reed. We're continuing to break it down as more and more pieces of evidence come to light and more pieces of minutiae keep getting introduced into the dialogue by the defense of Karen Reed, hoping to maybe convince some jurors of reasonable doubts that Karen struck John with her car, despite the timestamps matching up, DNA, and, you know, Karen's own words. Joining me to discuss, Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent. So here we go. Let's start with talking about the timestamps. And there's a lot to get through here. We just saw the testimony just the other day, the timestamp details being brought to light that basically show, okay, his phone stops actively being active at precisely the time the vehicle strike occurs with the Lexus SUV. Let's talk about the timestamp, how they got here. Let's go with that. Why now? Why did it take so long for this time to be, I guess, aligned? What was the issue here? Why now that this is suddenly there and we didn't have it in the past?
Well, there were a couple issues, Tony. First of all, there was some information that they weren't able to glean initially from her Lexus. And now with them hiring a new company and new digital forensic experts, they were able to retrieve information that was not able to retrieve previously. So that's one reason. And then the second reason is this long secret, synchronization, is that a word? Sequencing it appropriately in terms of the delay or the lapse between one clock versus another clock and how the time is kept. So when you put that all together, now we have it just in black and white. It can't be changed. It's a factual matter, and you know, it's damning to the defense.
I mean, so we have new data from the Lexis. That's how they were able to basically match this all. Again, why did it take so long for us to get here? This has obviously been an ongoing trial, an ongoing case for so many years now. Is this new technology? Like, what is the, I don't fully understand the reason why this took this long, because it is a pretty damning piece. And had we known this like right out of the gate, maybe there wouldn't even be a trial.
Well, I don't think so, because there's no way that somebody like Karen Reed would ever plea. Mm-hmm. She's just not that kind of a person. You know, early on, we heard Yannetti say, listen, this was just an accident. She loved him, mm-hmm. right? And look at where we are here today. But to your question, essentially, you had individuals that were not hired, that weren't hired the first time around. Mm-hmm. They just went with individuals who did not have the technology and the knowledge to get that information. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting, Tony, because probably 6-7 months ago, oh, wow, that's when we first started seeing in the documents and paperwork, whoa, they were able to get you more information from the quote-unquote black box, mm-hmm. right, from that Lexis. And that's why it's very simple, because technology has to meet knowledge, mm-hmm. and that's what happened.
And there's a lot that is to be gleaned out of that. The testimony from Shannon Burgess just the other day. It looks pretty damning. And then the defense came up, and then they started swinging at him. Not about the data itself, not about the timestamps, not about how it matches up, not about that critical piece, but about his resume, about what he has on his LinkedIn, about what's on a website that he didn't quite finish a bachelor's degree that he says on the website or in his profile, it says that he had completed. Good distraction, but also something that you look at and you go, come on, guys. Like, did we not know that the defense was not going to look for something to try and impugn this guy's credibility? How did this miss the prosecution? How did they miss this as being a possible issue? Or did they know it going in? Like, yeah, they're going to go after him for this, but if that's all they got, that's all they got.
No, I think the prosecution missed it. This could have been cleaned up a long time ago. In fact, the defense, it would seem, just figured this out. Why? Because they had a CV from him that was submitted in this trial that showed his diploma was in progress, that he was still working on getting his BS degree in these, from this university, University of Alabama at Birmingham. Mm-hmm. So essentially, that's how they caught it, and then they just cross-referenced it. And actually, my understanding is it wasn't even the defense. It was a Reddit FKR who said, hey, you guys might want to take a look at this. Mm-hmm. And then da-da, here we are. But certainly the prosecution should have double-checked what was on the website, because everybody else's. There's just so many sleuths out.
Mm-hmm.
If there's anything that doesn't add up, you better know about it.
Yeah. I mean, it just seemed like a kind of obvious one that was overlooked. I mean, you better make sure that who you're bringing up there has, you know, accurate information online. Do you, obviously, anybody could you know, relay this information to a certain extent. I guess one could say, you know, it's attacking the messenger, but this is the guy who, you know, put these dots together and who's giving this opinion. Would it be just as easy for anyone else to have put these dots together or give this opinion? Or is there some reason that this is the only guy that seems was qualified to do it?
Well, I think the concerning part isn't Shannon Burgess. He's certainly qualified. He's got 10 years of doing this under his belt. I think he's absolutely competent. You know, honestly, having a BS degree from a university, meaning a Bachelor of Science or any degree, doesn't make you great at digital forensics, mm-hmm. right? You're studying a lot of digital stuff. He was getting a minor in mathematics and business administration. Really nothing to do with digital forensics. It's all his other certifications and education that is interesting and important for what he was reporting on. So it's really a large sum, not that important, but it just looks bad. It looks like he was deceiving. And he really, I don't believe he was. I've explained this before, but essentially when you're an expert witness and you work for a company, that company pays for everything in terms of your advertising. Mm-hmm. And they take your CV and they disseminate it to the various platforms. And then those website creators make up a nice creative page about you, something that's easy to digest. And how they did this, and the fact that he didn't see it, Tony, I know people say, oh, come on, he should have been looking at it. You don't necessarily look at the websites that feature you.
Yeah.
You just don't. And you need to, and certainly after this, he's going to. He took down his LinkedIn already. On LinkedIn, there's a particular annotation you must make when you talk about when you got your degrees. And I know this because of putting that in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to say the year you graduated. And what I believe happened from really researching this is he put in the LinkedIn his estimated when he thought he was going to graduate, which I think if I remember.
And I think essentially what
was he didn't graduate.
LinkedIn just
that because he hadn't been on his LinkedIn page like most of us for years, other than receiving.
Let's talk for a second about the actual data itself. The big point here, not his resume or him not completing the bachelor's degree. If we're just talking the data alone, how damning is it? And is there any other way that you think the defense of Karen Reed is going to try and spin this other than just trying to attack the credibility or the degree that he didn't complete yet on his LinkedIn page or the website?
I don't think that will sit that well with the jury in terms of if they're able to understand it. Brennan did a pretty good job getting things out there that were important.
Mm-hmm.
It's really going to depend. You know, to be honest, I think a lot of times the experts cancel each other out.
Yeah.
I think juries want to hear, okay, this expert said this, where's the counter to that? But remember in the last trial, they discounted what ARCA had to say.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas all of us at social media, we're all in a fluff about it. Oh, see, there's no possible way, according to their models and their potato throwers,
yum,
that that car could have hit John O'Keefe.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the jury really discounted that piece. So, I don't know how they'll take it, but certainly social media is up in a dander about it.
Yeah, I mean, it seems pretty damning where it's a timestamp and the two timestamps seem to align. I mean, even if they were, I mean, because they have been off because they've all recognized that these timestamps have been a bit off. But just having it alone, even if you couldn't quite match this up, the fact that her vehicle struck something around that time, very close to the time of John O'Keefe being hit. I mean, that in itself is damning without it even matching up to the exact second.
Yeah, I agree. And when you look at some of the clips, right, she mm-hmm. specifically says in her recent interview, she said, listen, I never reversed my car, never backed up. And I love that clip because mm-hmm. it shows she's not being honest. And she keeps saying it right now to the media. And we've seen her write it in text messages. Well, guess what? The information from the text stream doesn't lie.
No. And that's an interesting part about all of this. Karen Reed, it seems, has a very difficult problem keeping her story straight. And I don't know really why that is. I mean, obviously, if you're lying about something, it's a lot more easy to mess it up and say the wrong thing because you're not recalling actual fact. But she should know the facts of her case by now. Why is it, how is it, do you think, that she goes out there and says these kind of asinine things like, I never backed up? Well, the data says you did, and you have even recognized that you have backed up yourself. She goes from one story to the other, but expects anyone listening to just believe whatever is the current story of the moment that's coming out of her mouth.
Well, the issue is there are minions out there that will believe anything she says and the defense says. They're not even looking anymore at the facts. They're not looking at the details that are really objective. They're not subjective. They're objective. Mm-hmm. It's data. And for that reason, that's what this case needs to really rely on, the DNA. Mm-hmm. Those witnesses were really just sort of overlooked when it comes to what everybody's talking about. And to me, they give some of the best information. John O'Keefe's DNA was on the taillight, period, end of story. Mm-hmm. And to say, well, they dated each other, so of course his DNA is there. How many of you have, you know, rubbed up on a taillight of your partner's car?
Exactly.
It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. And let's talk about the DNA. Let's talk about the DNA that was on the taillight. There was the hair that was there. And they matched it to John O'Keefe. Now, they also said there was two other male DNAs that were found on the taillight. I know that it's room to speculate, I guess, but what on earth would you be speculating about? I don't seem to understand the line of thinking here. Well, are we saying that two of the guys were out behind Karen's car and they also were struck by the vehicle or somehow rubbed their faces against your taillight and then that's how that DNA got there too? I'm not clear from the Karen Reed side as to where that argument even goes or how it makes any sense.
Well, I think the important piece is that Buchanan and Proctor's DNA was tested against those samples, mm-hmm. and it was negative.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important because that's part of the big conspiracy, right? Mm-hmm. So, but their DNA was nowhere near the taillight. And then on the hair, they weren't able to match it precisely to John O'Keefe, but they were able to do the maternal matching. Mm-hmm. So anybody with DNA from the maternal side of his family would match to that hair, but it wasn't a hair from the head, right? It was a hair from the body, mm-hmm. like the arm, Tony.
Yeah.
Would be my belief, but 100% matched John O'Keefe and, of course, anyone else in John O'Keefe's family.
These are some big facts that have come out. And obviously the defense, they've been doing their cross, but they have yet to take their turn. Where do you think this is going to go when it's up to them to call their own witnesses and such? Are they going to even bring any of these points back up? Or is it just going to be, let's scrape this to the side because it's kind of damning. And let's just fill the room with other things that we don't have to, you know, match science to.
I think if they're smart, they will just try to sidestep a lot of this information and try to get their third-party culprit theory in. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been fully denied. And by the way, they keep doing very underhanded things like throwing up the photo of the arm that's been embellished and sort of painted red. Mm-hmm. I mean, it looks ridiculous. Nothing like the original photo and writing dog bites on it. Things like that really weren't supposed to be allowed. They're not allowed at this point to bring up their third party culprit in this way. But I think that they'll try to focus on that. And then of course they're going to have their counter experts come up, to say, nah, anything, that the prosecution brought up is null and void from our expert opinion. Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be a big one. The ARCA folks are going to be in this at some point. We talked the other week about this, and you had a lot of issues with the way that they had done their own experiments and their own testing. Let's dive into that a little bit deeper. Explain to me what you found issue with their method of testing this and why it may not necessarily be as accurate as the defense likes to believe.
My issue with ARCA from the beginning has always been they did not keep into account inculpatory evidence, such as we've been talking about a bit here, the hair, the DNA, the shards that were embedded by definition in John O'Keefe's shirt, the dent on the back bumper, the broken taillight pieces that were found at the ground. They just discounted all of that. Mm-hmm. How can you discount that and have a make any sort of reasonable explanation about what happened out there? And I just think it was so myopic and not anything I've ever seen from a good expert. A good expert takes it all into account and makes a expert opinion. Mm-hmm. Can't pick and choose.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be an issue here. And when this does come up and it is their turn on the stand, it'll be fascinating. Do you think we're going to hear anything different this time around, or any new testing that has been done that they're going to try and pull out of their hat?
Yeah, it seems as if they did do new testing. And again, Judge Cannone allowed that in, although she did say it was a Rule 14 violation. There's issues with it. Not the testing so much as ARCA in general, related to them being paid by the defense, related to all their emails back and forth, all of that information that was withheld everyone from the prosecution. That just can't happen, and it did happen. Mm-hmm. And so Brennan is really, you think this whole situation with Shannon Burgess about his Bachelor of Science being on LinkedIn is something he's going to be able to point out, really, that they had lack of candor and lied to the court.
It certainly is going to be fascinating. We have the other expert that they're needing to take some time because he needs to get some testing done that the prosecution is talking about in terms of being able to be ready for court to testify. What are we expecting with that witness that was brought up the other day that they had to have the sidebars and the off the record or off the record with the jury conversations about in terms of what we're going to be seeing there for the prosecution?
Well, remember now that ARCA was allowed to do other experiments and make new conclusions, that means that the prosecution's expert, their crash reconstructionist, is going to also be able to take a look at that and to see if that is refutable from his test. So he has a lot of work ahead of him. And I don't think they got the information, meaning the CW, until May 7th. Mm-hmm. So to put something like this, to do his own experiments, it's going to take weeks. And so I would expect him to have a chance to testify much later. But certainly to counter anything ARCA has to say.
That's going to be interesting because, I mean, are we going to see this witness testify while the prosecution is still bringing out its case in chief, or is this going to be an after the fact thing? Because I can't imagine the prosecution actually has a whole lot more to go, and the timing of this seemed to be a big issue for the judge.
Right. This is going to be rebuttal, but it seems from what Judge Cannone has said, she's going to give the CW a lot of leeway because, you know, she allowed this in so late, May 7th. And this isn't just, you know, something to do with variance in time, like she allowed for the prosecution with information that everybody knew. This is going to be brand new information from experiments that ARCA has done, a brand new report. And so it's a big deal for now. Their expert is probably working, that poor guy is probably working 12 hours a day trying to get this all put together.
Yeah. And the fact that it is coming in this late, it's going to be fascinating to see what takes place and how accurate, you know, they can redo some of these things, what sort of experiments they're going to do. What are you expecting that we're going to see differently here from what ARCA is going to present? We know not all expert witnesses obviously come across with the exact same expert opinions.
You know, I think ARCA will in large part keep their findings. I think that they are going to have to address all that inculpatory information that we were speaking about previously. Mm-hmm. But I think the big difference in this trial is going to be this expert, meaning the CW's expert from Aperture, talking about that we haven't seen yet, talking about what their ideas and what their experiments are going to show in terms of what happened with John O'Keefe, particularly concerning when she hit him, when she backed up. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be ponying off of the information to do with the timing that now they have for the first time, right? We have the exact car data, and we can show it went in reverse and it hit something. So I can't wait to see the CW's witness. It's going to be my favorite one, the one I've been looking forward to the most.
Yeah, it will be very fascinating to see what exactly they have to say. The third party theory that has yet to really, you know, get its legs in this case yet, but we're anticipating that it's going to take off. Do you think it's going to be just as dramatic as the first time, with the story being told exactly as it was the first time, of a possible fight of the dog, of this or that? Or are they going to have to lean back, because it does look rather ridiculous when you take a step back and see just how many people theoretically would need to be involved for this theory to be real?
Tony, you're being way too logical and analytical. I mean, if you look at this third-party culprit defense,
you're cutting out.
Party for one of their sons all of a sudden decided to murder him for no particular reason and beat him to death of all things.
Yeah.
And throw him on the front lawn. And like you said, all the people that have to be involved, all the agencies, 70 different people I've counted that, you know, were CW witnesses, potentially they were on the list, may not have been called because they're duplicates, but all these people involved.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous, but all they need is one juror that is a conspiracy theorist or a stealth juror to buy it. And, you know, we could have another hung jury on our hands.
And that's the scary thing about all of this, because there seems to be a lot of very smart minds out there that can just look at this on the surface. I don't think it takes a smart mind really to just look at this on the surface and go, okay, here's what likely happened. I don't see another way around this, but you certainly do have a lot of people that are going down the route of this is a conspiracy, and that they're fully drinking up the house theory, which, again, you don't have to do to believe that she may be factually innocent. I think the evidence points far more to guilt these days than innocent, but you don't have to believe the house story. But people are still very much in that. How do you think things are at right now with the jury? Obviously, there's a lot more to come, but how do you think they're taking all of this in, and how do you think they're taking the cross-examinations that we're seeing from the defense in terms of, you know, seriousness, in terms of having valid points that they're trying to argue? Is any of it landing with the jury at this point?
You know, I wish I could see their faces, and I still may be going up there because that gives so much information. It seems that they were most engaged with the testimony of Jim McCabe and the testimony of John O'Keefe's niece. And I find that interesting. You know, leaning forward on their seats was reported and that they were taking copious notes. When I hear things like that, that tells me that they think that that testimony is very important to them.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to these experts, and I know you've sat and listened to this, I mean, it's hours. It's not hours. It's actually days that you have to listen to this. And quite frankly, it really is tedious and boring. Part of the cross-examination done on the DNA expert by Alan Jackson, he asked the same question. I was keeping track approximately six times because he wasn't getting the answer he wanted. And finally, Judge Canone said, please, let's move along. So guess what Alan Jackson did? Mm-hmm. He asked the exact same question again, even though he had been told to move along. So that's hard for a jury that's sitting there to really engage with all that duplicitous question, answer, and technical issues. I thought the DNA experts were amazing in terms of how they came off. So if you think that Jen McCabe, if they believe Jen McCabe, if they believe the niece who said the, you know, the relationship was on the rocks, mm-hmm. and then now if they're really parsing through all of this DNA information and the timestamp information, it's a logical conclusion that she hit him.
Yeah. What was your reaction? Obviously, we didn't get a chance to see the niece's testimony, but we certainly heard all about it from the reporting in the courtroom. And it sounded like it was pretty powerful. And it also conflicted with what Karen had been saying about them, her being so close with the kids. And for whatever reason, John just didn't like that, or he was uncomfortable with it. That's paraphrasing what Karen summed up. Sounds like it's the exact opposite. Sounds like they knew something was up with Karen. Karen seemed a bit unstable. They didn't know who they were getting every single day. A lot of people are going to argue, well, they're kids. They were influenced all this time by these people. Kids are pretty honest, I think, when it comes to something like this. How do you think that landed? And do you think the jury is going to take that as one of the more powerful pieces at the end of the day in this trial?
I think it's very powerful. It's powerful because they want to understand if Karen Reed is the type of person that could do this. And not that she had a motive to hit him per mm-hmm. se, but what was her mindset? What kind of person was she? Was she a person that was capable of hurting somebody in this way and leaving them? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what this shows, is her mindset. You know, they chose only to go with the niece because, remember, she woke up the niece out of a dead sleep, mm-hmm. didn't have the number for John's friends, and said, you know, oh my gosh, you know, was frantic mm-hmm. in front of this niece. And I think that shows also the mindset of her that morning. And she got in some very important facts, such as Karen Reed saying she thought he might have been hit by a plow, and could she have hit him? Mm-hmm. So, you know, what person would not believe this niece? I think everybody is going to believe the niece. And she laid some, I think, important groundwork, plus just the heartstrings of it all.
How much of, I mean, another part of this case that we didn't get a chance, that we didn't have last time, is Karen's words, Karen's mouth, Karen talking in all these interviews. And there's just so much that we continue to see that comes out from the cutting room floor. How much do you think that is going to be weighing on the juror's mind this time around as well? Because her story, obviously, credibility is a big thing here. When they talk about the LinkedIn page and the guy's resume, Karen doesn't really stand very strong in terms of credibility here.
No, she doesn't. And unless you are just firmly in her camp, and those people that are, they're not watching the trial, I don't believe. They're listening to, you know, the blogger mm-hmm. who, you know, is squarely in her camp, and others on YouTube and such for their information, as opposed to really dialing down in on the trial. And, you know, stations like yours that actually go to the facts. You seek people who are watching the trial, who are know the facts. Mm-hmm. There's that camp, and then there's the camp that really just goes to the drama side of this case.
Yeah. How do you think this, I mean, Avi, I'm not asking for how do you think the jury's going to find, but how do you think this ends in terms of all of the drama in this case? Let's say she's found guilty. Does this end to the few, I mean, I want to say few, but judging from who's showing up outside the building, you can't put bots outside a building, but you can certainly buy them online and make it appear as though you have more followers and more people actively engaging in this conversation than are actually there, which we know is going on from the defense side of Karen Reed or whoever is behind the social end of things. How do you think this goes at the end of the day? Do they end up moving on to something else? And, you know, Karen's just kind of left here. Are they all expecting them to keep fighting the good fight for Karen? Or is everybody just going to be like, I've had enough, and Karen can fight her fight on her own?
Well, if you look, and I know you just made reference to it, I think I counted 12 the other day that are screaming for her, right? And so her numbers are so far down in terms of people willing to take time out of their day now and fight the good fight. I think that in part, some will stay with it, but I'm hoping, I got to tell you what I'm hoping. I hope that they put their efforts toward the Sandra Birchmore case, where there was clear political corruption, where there was a guy, I mean, it's a sickening case where, again, another medical examiner made a huge mistake ruling that a suicide instead of a homicide from the same office, by the way, as this medical examiner, which was a bit of a soup sandwich, not committed to anything. Right? Well, the aliens could have killed John O'Keefe, according to her, pretty much. Right? It was anything and everything was a possibility. So I hope that they refocus and really look at that corruption that was at Stoughton and that group of a band of thieves, because, you know, just horrible what happened in that community.
I know there was arguments early on. They were trying to bring some of the Sandra Birchmore information into this case. The judge said not going to have it. The way that things have been slipping in here, as we talked about earlier with the, you know, the dog bites and things like that that are written on some of the images. Do you think that they're going to still try and slip this in here where it's going to end up being brought up in this case and then arguments are going to be able to be made about any of that in terms of the credibility of the police and their relation to that case over here, which, you know, could be troublesome?
You know, I don't think so. I think she will stay steadfast about that. There's really only two officers, well, three, that had such minor involvement in the case, except for Guarino, who also was involved in the extraction. But everybody needs to understand, those officers that extract information from cell phones, they don't analyze it. They literally have one job, and that is to make sure they get all pictures, data, emails, et cetera, off of a particular device. That's it. They're not supposed to analyze it or anything else. They hand that off to the investigators. And so really, it wasn't on his plate to really do a full analysis. So it's just interesting. He's really the only one to me that had any sort of, you know, involvement other than was the first on scene and left.
Sure. Yeah. That'll be a fascinating case. And I agree. Take the energy and use it for good. Use it for a case where there actually is some really bad things happening here that do involve officers. Go look at Delphi. There's another one that maybe folks should take a little energy and go after for someone who's been wrongly convicted. Just fascinating to watch. It's almost a really interesting social experiment seeing just how caught up people can be. Have you ever seen a case like this where it's gotten to be so two completely dramatic opposite sides? And it almost feels like everybody's watching a completely different case and interpreting things in completely opposite directions.
You know, I'm glad you said that, Tony, because that's what the interpretation is. You know, you could say the same sentence and the two different sides would interpret it completely opposite for whatever helped their objective. And that's really sad. That's why I always, even this morning on Yellow Cottage Tales, who is Kevin Linehan, who's been covering it very closely, wrote a book that he just released on it. It was so interesting because even they were diverging from the facts. And at the end of the day, Tony, everyone needs to revert back to facts, not drama, not all this sideshow. And I think it would be very easy for both sides to agree. And I'm actually seeing some not wholehearted FKR people, but some people come around and now they're saying, you're right, she's guilty, but the investigation was just too bad for me to convict. At least that's the step in the right direction that they're seeing the facts are there.
Yeah, and that seems to be where I think a lot of people are. The investigation was just too bad to convict, which then ends up making her factually innocent, even if she is not, in fact, really innocent. But again, facts are facts. You can keep adding more and more things to the soup. It's not going to make it any better, and it doesn't change the core of what it is at the end of the day, what the base of this thing is. But there's still a lot to go, and I'm really wondering if reasonable doubt is going to win the case here for Karen Reed, or if we're going to be sitting here again with another hung jury. And if we have another hung jury, what happens then? Are we going to do this for a third time, or do we just say, okay, we're done?
Well, first of all, Tony, if it's a hung jury, mm-hmm. it 100% we will be. If it's a hung jury, I think they will try her again for mm-hmm. the third time. And don't forget, Tony, what's hanging out there? What's hanging out there are all of these civil cases against
yeah.
her.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of them, most notably the O'Keefes, the mm-hmm. wrongful death. And we saw this with O.J. Simpson, mm-hmm. found guilty or found innocent criminally, but mm-hmm. not
civilly. Innocent. Yeah.
But found responsible and culpable in mm-hmm. a civil trial where it's this the preponderance of the evidence that he committed the crime.
Yeah.
Is that interrupting, Tony?
You're there. No, you're good. You were cutting in and out a little bit, but I could hear you.
Okay.
So we're good. Now, there's just so damn much. I'm wondering every day, is this the future of cases? Are we going to see a lot more vitriol like this in other cases on each side? Is this just a reflection of how society is right now? And this is get used to it, basically. Or is there something special about the Karen Reed case that created this type of atmosphere?
I think the Karen Reed case is a sign of what's to come. I'm already seeing it on Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
Delphi, it never really exploded like I think it would have if anybody had any idea what was going on at that trial.
Yeah.
You know, they kept everything so under wraps, but we're already seeing it on Idaho. I think we are in a whole new situation and wave in terms of social media and sleuthing influences on these trials and what people think about them.
I would agree. I don't know if that's good or bad, that you have more people out there looking at things and maybe you can find things better with more resources, or if this is just going to end up creating more and more confusion for anything, you know, that gains any sort of traction out there in the public. A lot of questions.
Yeah, I'm just hoping that I really am hoping the jury sticks with what they see in the courtroom. I fear that that's almost impossible.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to hope that they do, because if they stick with what they see in this jury trial, she will be convicted.
No, I agree. We will see.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64,000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64,000.
By texting 64,000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Host. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethost.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64,000. That's WATER to 64,000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64,000.
By texting 64,000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Host. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethost.com/terms.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.